Coming up in this podcast, Dexa Spires Jandakot, Raleigh Finlinson, Sandfire, Ag Developments, Quintus, Dallas Dempster and John Elliott, APM, Iron Ore and Remsense IPO.
Welcome to Mark My Words, the weekly podcast from Business News, with Mark Pownall and Mark Beyer discussing the important business news and data stories from Western Australia.
Welcome to our weekly podcast and welcome Mark Beyer. Mark, first up, National property group Dexus has bought Jandakot Airport, quite a big deal.
Look, this is one of the biggest property transactions we've seen in Western Australia for a long time, $1.3 billion. Now, it's Jandakot Airport, you know, a major general aviation facility, but more significantly, the large industrial estate that has been developed and surrounds the airport. It's already well established. There's about 50 tenants in that area, but there's still another 80 hectares of land that can be developed, and that was a big part of the lure for Dexus. They're saying that they've been looking at WA for a number of years, particularly with a focus on logistics. They say they've got a lot of national clients and they try to develop facilities for them around the country. They've not been able to do that in WA now. But here they've got a big piece of land in a prime location, so it's going to become a big logistics hub for Western Australia.
And they actually own the airport part as well, right? So does that make them an airport manager, or do they have a someone in there managing the airport on their behalf?
Look, effectively, yes, they do own the operating airport. They'll have a management team in there, sort of running the day-to-day operations. That's ancillary to, you know, the bit that's the real lure for them. And in fact, the operating airport, they've attributed a value of $200 million to that. So it's really $1.1 billion is for the industrial land and the development opportunities. That gives you some sense of where the real value lies here.
And Dexus has been a little bit in the news this week.
Well, look, they're a very big investor in Western Australia. Only a couple of months ago, they bought a 49% interest in Capital Square, which is the Woodside head office building up the top end of the terrace. And then in a more newsworthy way, they own the Carillion Retail Arcade in the central city, and in fact told the, most of the tenants there that they had to move out in coming weeks. Now, that's a reflection of, you know, a whole range of issues in the CBD in terms of poor retail trade. But yeah, it's pretty tough for the tenants in there as well. Tenants who face onto Hay Street and Murray Street Mall, they'll stay, but it's all the ones in the middle. Now, kind of surprising in a sense, because there's a huge amount of foot traffic through there, and I would have thought that's a big tick for attracting shops into those tenancies. But Dexus evidently has taken the view that they want to clear it out and pave the way for a much bigger redevelopment of that whole asset. And to be blunt, I think the tenants complicate that task for them. It's tough for the tenants.
It sounds very tough.
I was going to mention too, like a bit of history here, listeners might not recall, Jandakot Airport, of course, was government-owned, as all airports around the country used to be. And then it was there was that big wave of privatisation deals in the 80s and 90s. Perth Airport was sold around that time. Jandakot Airport was sold in 1998. The original owner was a well-known land developer, Kevin Pollock, who's been subsequently caught up in all sorts of regulatory issues before the courts. He paid a grand price of $7 million
for the airport
when he originally bought the asset.
Wow.
He then sold it in 2005. It was Ascot Capital, which was set up by Greg King and David Vandewalt. They teamed up with an African investment group, Kirsch. They bought it in 2005. Even then, though, the reported figure was only $47 million. But that preceded the big investment in developing the industrial estate, which is what's really generated the value.
So prior to that, it was just an airport, which is obviously a pretty low-margin business.
A big airport with lots of scrub. Now it's an airport with lots of industrial land and tenants paying a nice amount for it.
Yeah, well, there you go. And, of course, you know, as the city grew over that time, Jandakot move closer and closer to the centre of it. Is that right?
Well, yes, you can look at it that way. And very briefly, it's actually, there's two deals that Ascott Capital is working on. They've got a separate portfolio of infrastructure assets around the country, valued at around $800 million. They're in negotiations with GPT, another ASX-listed player.
Okay.
So I was quite intrigued, actually, to see these details, which suggest that Ascott Capital was much larger than previously thought.
Mm. Well, there you go, because they're around the country and pretty low-key in each state, obviously.
That seems to be the case.
Yeah, interesting. All right, now, one of the most high-profile winners we've had at the Business News, the 40 Under 40 Awards, Raleigh Finlinson, he's emerged in a new role after exiting Saracen Minerals / Northern Star.
Raleigh's taking over Genesis Minerals, a junior gold stock. They've got the Ulysses Gold Project they've been working away at for a long time now. They're looking to raise $20 million. Raleigh's going to tip in $7 million of that. And he's brought some very powerful people with him. Nev Power, former Fortescue Metals boss. Michael Bowen, one of Perth's best-known corporate lawyers.
Yeah.
And Northern Star Resources as well. So Nev and Michael are going on the board. They're investing. Northern Star is investing. So suddenly Genesis goes from, you know, one of many junior gold stocks out there struggling for attention,
yep,
to potentially the next big star.
Yeah, the one that putting everyone on notice, obviously.
Share price went through the roof after the deal was announced, as tends to occur with these things. And look, you know, Raleigh had an outstanding track record at Saracen, built it from a very small company to, it had a value of about $6 billion prior to its merger with Northern Star. And of course, worth mentioning that Bill Beament, he was the person that built, you know, Raleigh was building Saracen, yeah. Bill Beament was building Northern Star. They've both left the big company. Bill's gone on to join VentureX, a copper stock. So a very clear parallel between the two of them, in terms of leaving the big established company and going back to almost a square one and taking over a junior stock and getting back into the fun and games of building.
Albeit Bill Beament's focused on copper, you know, and there's a little bit of a whole, you know, do I call it this? It's sort of like an extension of the battery minerals play in a way that copper's sort of seen as the, you know, an important component of this electrification process that's going on. Whereas what you're talking about there with Raleigh, he's really focused on staying in gold, right?
That's right. Yep. And look, you know, copper's certainly seen as one of those big, a commodity with a big future. But gee, you know, gold is very solid and steady, good price. Price has been strong for quite a long while now,
yeah.
And plenty of opportunity there.
And then, well, I guess that's a good segue to Carl Simic. His Sandfire Resources has made a big acquisition in Spain. So we're talking copper there as well, right?
That's right. So Sandfire Resources was a company that came to prominence with its DeGrussa copper project here in Western Australia. That's gone in the annals of history as one of the most spectacular discoveries in this state, and has been a good money spinner for Sandfire, but like all deposits, it's got a limited life. And Sandfire has spent a long time searching for, exploring and investing in other growth opportunities. They haven't really come across anything major in Western Australia. They've got a project in Botswana, the Motheo project, and that's continuing to be developed. But they really surprised the market when they came out this week. It's a $2.6 billion deal. So, you know, it's very rare to see transactions of that kind. And in particular, extremely rare for a Western Australian company to be making the acquisition.
Mm.
You know, the usual pattern we see is that people here build up a successful business and then a big global player comes in and gobbles them up.
Yeah.
But here we've got a WA company doing it. They've got a big capital raising to help fund the acquisition.
And just so, right, it is a working mine in Spain, correct?
Yes, sorry, the detail there. It's called the Matza mine, no relation to Matza Resources, another local company. Half owned by Trafigura, a European company, and an investment group out of Abu Dhabi. So you know, it's a large producer, 120,000 tons of copper per year, and you know, potential that they see it as having large scale, high grade, quite a long mine life, and some exploration upside. So you know, it really gives a considerable future for Sandfire, and then presumably they'll be continuing to evaluate longer term growth opportunities there as well.
We don't really think of Europe as a mining continent, do we?
Well, funny you should say that, because I was going to weave in a little bit more history here.
Yeah.
Rio Tinto...
Of course.
...had their first big project was a copper mine in Spain, in fact, in the same province, Andalusia. Is that the pronunciation right, Mark? You've travelled in Spain more than me?
Andalusia, yeah, I'm not sure. Andalusia. I haven't actually been to that province, so...
So that's in the southwest of Spain. So
where the Andalusian horses come from, you
say? They would, yes. So, in fact, it's a mining province that supplied the ancient Greeks and the ancient Romans. So we're talking serious history here.
Absolutely.
And then it was 1873 when Rio Tinto, which, of course, Red River, was established as a mining company by some Scottish investors. They've subsequently sold out of that Spanish asset, but you know, that was the starting point for Rio Tinto, one of the biggest companies globally in the mining industry. I always enjoy it when you're coming to work one morning and you see you're really surprised by a transaction of this kind and this scale. So good on Sandfire.
Yeah, and be intrigued to find out how Carl's managed to go get to Europe and back and to do the deals, or has it all been done by Zoom, Mark?
Good point. I'm not actually sure about that. There must have been, they must have overcome that challenge. Just one little aside here, and this is a trend that we're seeing a fair bit. Australian Super has become a giant superannuation fund. They've become an increasingly active player in Australian markets. They're going to tip in $150 million as part of the capital raising.
Yeah, right.
So they're more than just a passive institutional investor that takes part in a placement or a rights issue. You know, they're a sort of a cornerstone investor. Yeah. And they've been involved in a few other transactions that we've spoken about.
Well, they'll probably get $150 million coming in every week.
That's right, they've got the money to invest.
That's the problem when you're a big player like that in a market like this. You become, you just take a percentage of everything, you run out of space, don't you? Now, agriculture being the focus of a couple of interesting deals, which I think you've written about, Mark.
Yeah, look, we don't cover ag a great deal. Of course, the big industry there is, of course, the wheat growing, grain growing in the broadacre farms. But there's been some really interesting developments about diversifying agriculture in WA. One of them is up in the Gascoyne region around Carnarvon, a well-known sort of horticultural production area. The government has been investing a lot in making more land available up there, upgrading water supplies and power supplies. And then they announced during the week that three groups have been given the rights to develop about 300 hectares of land up there. By far the largest investor will be a company called Frutico. Now, this came out of a business, Roger Fahl and Liz Fahl. They've been growing table grapes down in the Peel region for about 20-odd years.
Yep.
They've set up a joint venture with a Sydney group called Fresh Produce. They're going to invest about $20 million in Carnarvon. They're also making a big investment up around Broome. They've got about 100 hectares under cultivation just east of Broome.
Okay.
And in fact, they're about to start picking their first table grapes at Broome and looking to grow that to about 400 hectares.
And is that the Broome one, is that to service Broome or is that to service... They fly to Singapore from Broome, don't they?
Well... And also to displace imports into the Australian market.
Oh, right, seasonal.
So the beauty of what they'll have growing in the Peel region, in the Gascoyne and up at Broome.
Yes, okay.
So they'll be supplying grapes 52 weeks a year.
Yeah, got it. And there are other horticulturalists in the same boat, actually, now I think about that.
But, you know, I think a very significant investment, a significant diversification. Yeah,
the numbers are big, aren't they?
Yeah. And good to see, you know, if they can displace imports and get more. One of the advantages they talk about is much better utilisation of their staff as well. They keep people all year round.
Yeah, of course.
And then the other one that's happened recently is up in the Ord River irrigation area, up around Kununurra. One of the original crops that was growing up there was sugar. Yep. Sorry, slip of the tongue. Cotton.
Yeah.
Like many crops up there, it didn't work. It was destroyed by pests. There's been a lot of investment in new varieties of cotton, including some genetically modified varieties. They're looking very promising. Federal government has committed to supply loan $32 million to the Kimberley Cotton Company, a privately held company, to develop a cotton gin for processing the product. So this once again is provides really big potential for that area. Estimates that annual production of cotton up there could be close to $1 billion. So, you know, a major sort of step up. A lot of the growing up there at the moment, it's sort of horticultural products, corn and sandalwood plantations. Mm. So what I think we'll see is that a lot of the land will be switched over to cotton growing. There'll be a lot of rotation of crops.
Yep.
But all in all, makes for a much brighter future for that area, which I don't think has ever really lived up to its full potential.
Yeah, well, I guess what do we talk about full potential there? I guess, you know, they built that dam in the early 70s. And, you know, there's been land releases over the years. And you're right, there were lots of setbacks with their early efforts. But I think that's starting to get to some sort of potential, isn't it? It's, you know, the fact is they keep adding more land there, which is, it's good. And, I don't know the scale of exactly what gets produced up there, but I think it's quite a lot more than it was even 10 years ago. So,
or off the back, though, of some very expensive government infrastructure investment.
Right.
And not just the dam itself.
No.
But the new irrigation channels that go in.
Yeah.
And anyone that's worked up in the tropical north knows you've got you can only work for part of the year before the wet season kicks in.
Yeah.
It's very expensive doing work up there, getting equipment up there, getting good people up there. But here's potential. And there's some Kimberley Agricultural Investment. That's a Chinese-backed company. They'll be the major investor, most likely.
Yeah.
Along with the local farming cooperative and the local Aboriginal corporation. So a nice mix there.
And look, the links to that Ord River scheme continue with another map. There's goings on at a company called Quintus. And that, you know, kind of had its beginnings there, I think, up in the large part of its projects, sandalwood trees, etc., were in the Ord River basin.
You're right. So Quintus, very well known as a manager of agricultural investment schemes, particularly these sandalwood plantations, and most of what they've got are up in the Ord River area and surrounding lands. Quintus went into administration in 2018, then got rescued by some private equity investors. But there's been a whole range of legal sort of ramifications from that, particularly focused on Frank Wilson, who was the founder and chairman of the company. In fact, there's a federal court matter underway at the moment, because one of the key developments in the collapse of Quintus was the termination of a contract to supply sandalwood oil to a perfume maker in the USA. That contract termination was not disclosed to the market when it happened. So now there's this case before the federal court as to who was responsible for that.
Right. Who's responsible for not disclosing it?
That's right, yeah. But separate to that one, Jacinta Burton has come across a really interesting development because there's a separate company, Agri Management, that's recently been set up. They're a specialist agricultural business manager, and essentially their aim is to take over management of some of the existing Sandalwood investment schemes, which are currently in the hands of Quintus. In the course of doing that, Agri Management, one of their founders is Graham Scott. He was in fact also a founder and director of Quintus. Agri Management has applied to ASIC for a financial services license so that they can pursue their business plans. As part of ASIC's assessment, they've been doing some inquiries, and Quintus has supplied information to ASIC about Graham Scott. He's now claiming that he's been defamed by Quintus and its key executives. So he's commenced Supreme Court action against them, against the company, against its chief executive, Richard Henfrey, its director, Julius Mathis, its CFO, Alistair Stevens, and various other related entities. So this, I imagine, will bring up lots of history around Graham Scott's role in managing the old Quintus investment schemes.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you know, Quintus, the company, has changed, but the investment schemes are still there.
Yeah.
You know, these things have a long life, and lots of investors around the state, around the country, tipped a lot of money into those forestry schemes. So this sort of raises this whole question of, well, will Quintus continue to have oversight of these schemes? Or will this new entity, Agri Management, get involved? But in the meantime, there's this defamation action that's been raised as well.
Right. Public action, so yeah, right. Interesting.
Lots of twists and turns along the way of that one.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Mm. Now, speaking of twists and turns, Mark, big names from the 1980s, two big names in the 1980s have passed away in the past week. Locally, Dallas Dempster, and nationally, John Elliott. So let's start with Dallas, I suppose.
Dallas Dempster, well, best known as the person who developed the Burswood Casino.
Yeah.
He won the rights to develop that in, I think, 1984, when Brian Burke was Premier of Western Australia. He was also involved in the petrochemical project down at Kwinana.
Pickle,
yeah. Yes.
PICL, just to talk about pickle.
Which became a major focus for the WA Inc. Royal Commission.
Yep.
So this was at the time when the likes of Alan Bond and Laurie Connell were, you know, the most prominent, best-known business figures in Western Australia.
Yeah.
Doing lots of deals with the WA government. Lots of very substantial fundraising being undertaken by Brian Burke and people in his government. Dallas Dempster was a substantial donor as part of that. And there was a lot of contention around the fact that his group, he was in partnership with a Malaysian company, Genting, a casino operator.
Yeah.
A lot of contention around his ability to win the Burswood deal, that there wasn't due process, that you know, he got the nod early on in a very opaque process. This was investigated by the WA Inc. Royal Commission. There were no adverse findings, but I think if we looked at it in the way that things are done now, where there's a big focus on transparency and due process, I think things would clearly be done very differently now. The corporate regulators had a go at Dallas Dempster as well over some of his share trading deals, ended up being convicted over some offences, in particular encouraging Laurie Connell to doctor Rothwell's books, but ended up with a $4,000 fine.
Right.
So compared to the shenanigans that other people were involved in the 80s, Dallas Dempster was sort of on the fringe of it, relatively clean compared to others, but nonetheless, a person that was convicted at a time when people operated very differently to the way they are now.
Yeah. So we hope, anyway. Well, quite some time. And look, I have to say, I don't recall ever meeting Dallas Dempster or interviewing him. I think at my beginnings as a journalist, he was already kind of out of the mainframe by then. And we really haven't seen much of him since that moment, unlike others, right? He kept a low profile for the last 30 years.
I mean, interesting, both before then and after then. He was just bit of a property developer, a bit of a share trader. He had that sort of moment of high profile.
Mm.
But, it was an exception to what he generally did over the course of his career.
Yeah. And John Elliott, Mark?
Another one of those people that dominated the news during the 1980s. So his company was Elders IXL.
Yeah.
It was one of the biggest companies in Australia at the time. So Elders, of course, was a agricultural services business. IXL.
Yeah. Cannery, whatever you call it.
Yes. Then that became the vehicle for buying a whole range of businesses, including Carlton and United Breweries.
Debt-fueled purchases.
The person that took Foster's beer to the world. Active.
Hang on. That was CB doing that at the same time as Alan Bond was doing the same thing with Forex and the like, right?
And
to a lesser extent, Swan.
Yeah.
But they were going head to head in the brewing game. Who can be bigger?
Because, of course, prior to then, all the breweries around Australia were autonomous state-based businesses.
That's right.
And it was Alan Bond and John Elliott that brought them together as big national undertakings.
And Bondy had Tooheys too, didn't he? Is that right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, Tooheys, Castlemaine, Swan versus CUB, which acquired Foster's and had Vic Bitter, and these are all the brands that you and I grew up with. that was all you could buy back then.
Yeah, that's right. But John Elliott, also federal president of the Liberal Party, spoken of many times as a potential prime minister. If he ever did that, he might have been akin to a Donald Trump, sort of the brash, aggressive, push through kind of person, which I don't think would work in an Australian political context.
No.
And then also very well known, he was president of the Carlton Football Club for about 20 years. Now, a mixed record there. They won a couple of premierships during that time, but he got forced out at the end because of a salary cap scandal.
Yep.
And I think you could argue that Carlton has suffered perhaps ever since then. They were subject to some very severe penalties because of those breaches, and they've never gone back to the glory days.
Mm.
I think, a very mixed record. John Elliott became, one of the richest, one of the most powerful people in the country. He largely lost his fortune at the end of it all there. Never really broke through into politics and left his football club with a very mixed legacy.
Mm.
So, quite a character.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think you've summarised those two characters really well. Thanks, Mark. All right, big change of subject here. Preparing for a forthcoming IPO, APM Group. It's quite a big IPO. I can't remember the number now. It was 1.2 billion or something like that. Has made some significant advisory board appointments, because this is not the board until they float, if I recall rightly.
That's right. So APM, company set up by Perth woman Megan Wynn, provides a whole range of human services on behalf of governments around the world, employment services, health services, disability services. Very large business, 7,000 people across 10 countries, annual revenue of about $1 billion. And we spoke about a month ago about the fact that they'd appointed Goldman Sachs and Gilbert and Tobin to evaluate a stock market float. Now they've appointed some very prominent directors to their advisory board, which just signals how serious they are about going down this path. including Nev Power, who we've already mentioned today.
Yeah.
So Nev's come onto the advisory board with the view that he'll go onto the main board if they do the ASX listing. Another one...
Do we remind people? Nev Power obviously ran Fortescue Metals Group.
Yep.
And...
Now chair of Perth Airport.
Yep.
And
he was on the... he was chaired the COVID commission set up by the federal government during the crisis.
Yep.
Quite a significant appointment, I would have thought. And he came out of an engineering background. Was it TIS or...?
I think one of those big sort of engineering contracting groups. Yeah,
yeah. It was kind of... He previously run that before Fortescue Metals. There you go. Sorry, a bit of background there.
Yeah. And then, of course, joining the board of Genesis Minerals as well with Raleigh Finlayson.
Yeah.
So sort of filling up his portfolio. The other person that's joined the advisory board at APM is Ben Wyatt, former WA treasurer, and rapidly become one of the busiest company directors in town.
Yeah.
He's on the board of
his
Rio Tinto.
His dance card has definitely got full this week.
Well, we kept on thinking it was full already. He's on the board of Rio Tinto and Woodside Petroleum.
Yep, so it's two pretty big ones.
He was already a director of the West Coast Eagles.
Yeah.
He's on the board of the Telethon Kids Institute. And also this week, it was announced that he's joined the board of the Perth Festival. And now the advisory board of APM.
Yep.
So, and of course, he's got his consulting business, Wyatt Martin.
Yeah.
Which he set up with his former chief of staff, Roger Martin. So, plenty to keep Ben Wyatt busy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the third one, Lisa Paul. She was a very prominent... she ran several big government departments in Canberra. And getting someone like her on board is a signal that's where APM makes its money.
Yeah.
Winning big contracts from government.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, the you can see the strategic links in all three of those, can't you?
But all in all, a signal that APM is very serious about going down the path of an ASX listing.
Yeah. No, got it. Now, look, just briefly, Mark, there's been some fallout from the fall in the iron ore price.
Yeah, look, we touched on this last Friday. There'd been, over the last, couple of months, and particularly last week, a sharp correction in the iron ore price. It's now trading around $100 a tonne. Mm.
Less than half what it was.
Yep. So that last week we spoke about the fact that the iron ore majors, their share price had taken a big hit. What we've seen this week is quite a few junior miners shutting up shop.
Right.
People that could make money at the peak of the boom but can't make money at the moment. So the first one to do that was Venture Minerals. They set up an iron ore mine in Tasmania. They've done one shipment. They've shut it down.
Yeah.
Another one was GWR Group. They've got a little mine up in the Midwest. They've suspended production there. There's also the Ridges mine up near Wyndham that was privately owned. That's just been shut down. These people, they only commence mining with the boom. There's some other people out there, one I'll mention, Phoenix Resources. They were the first junior company to jump on board, and they've done it very well. They've already made some big profits, and they've got, I think, an operation that's got more potential to be a niche player.
Mm-hmm.
And then others like Strike Resources and CZR, they're reviewing what they're going to do. So significant fallout.
Yeah. And Mark, maybe just from a context point of view, the fallout in the commodity price here, if we look to China, the big news out of China is the potential collapse of a major apartment building company. I think they got 1.2 million apartments pre-sold. Evergrande, I think, is what it's called in English. Huge trouble. Again, cheap debt, growth at a high pace, and using money from new investors to fund past previous promises, and it's got caught out. And that's seen as the government there trying to slow down construction, which it has stimulated because of COVID. And one of the consequences of that is less steel required, which obviously has a flow-on effect to the iron ore price here. And Evergrande is just a significant signal in that, I think.
Yeah. And look, still a very fluid situation there.
Yeah.
I think there was alarm a week or so ago that Evergrande was going to just collapse disastrously.
Yeah.
They've averted that so far, but I still, there's a lot more to play out there.
Yeah. And again, this problem that even a communist government has, is it going to rescue a private business? You know, you saw in America when, you know, the US government basically rescued all the investment banks, you know, and other large lending institutions, which, you know, is an unusual stance for a democracy in a capitalist economy. Really interesting to see what the Chinese government do, because, you know, even though they don't have voters per se, you know, a few million people who are, who've lost their life savings could be an unpleasant scenario. Mark, finally, talking of IPOs again, another WA company is proposing one. Let's talk about quickly RemSense.
Yeah, RemSense Technologies, they're raising $5 million through an IPO. It's not a particularly big transaction, but I think it's much more interesting than a lot of the other IPOs that we see come to the market. This was a business set up by Steve Brown back in 2012. Originally, their focus was just on drone photography. Now that's become a commodity business, and they looked at ways of adding value to that. They partnered with Woodside Petroleum, and in fact, they're working on a whole range of technology development projects with Woodside. And one that's come to pass is a product called Virtual Plant, which is creating a digital twin of big assets like LNG plants. Essentially, it allows Woodside staff, wherever they are, whatever device they've got, they can do a virtual walkthrough of any asset in the company's business. Having got to that point, and not alone in doing this, we've spoken in the past about another Perth company called Airscope Industries, doing some similar things. RemSense sees a global opportunity to take this to a whole range of businesses around the world. They've brought in Chris Sutherland, previously ran Programmed as chairman of their board, and raising this capital. So it's a rare example of a tech business. They've already generated substantial revenue. They've already got a proven product, and now they're raising money to commercialize it globally.
No, great, mate, and that's a great story. What I like about this is, you know, again, this whole idea that WA just digs things up. Well, we don't. We have, you know, there's all this sort of services that come with that, including software and technology. And the beauty of this one is it's not limited to resources. It's something that can spread out into other sectors. So it's a fabulous story. And I look forward to, I haven't seen the prospectus on that one, so it'd be interesting to read it. Thanks, Mark. For our subscribers only, MyBN puts you in control of the information you choose to consume and when you choose to consume it. You can follow organisations, people, lists and projects, and you can receive alerts when there is an update on anything you follow. You can save articles to read later and follow news by sector, creating a news feed focused on your interests. MyBN is the only platform of its kind within WA. Check it out on our website. I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Mark My Words with Mark Pownall and Mark Beyer from Business News. For more information, please go to businessnews.com.au/podcasts. And to receive these regularly, search for Business News WA in iTunes or SoundCloud.